Hello, welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebray and Anna Singh. Join us on our writing journey.
This is episode 3 of Diving Into Writing, and today we're going to be talking about character. So I started thinking about this in the way of thinking favourite characters of mine in books that I've read. And then I moved on to thinking about my own characters that I'm writing about. So taking one example of a favourite, I thought of Anne Elliot in Jane Austen's Persuasion, one of my favourite books. And I wrote down some words that describe Anne. She's very reliable. She's very patient. She has to cope with a very peculiar family. And I think very cleverly, the family show up her good qualities. So the family are all snobbish and really pompous and awful, self-regarding people. And she's the opposite. So this is something we could think about as character, how you show character through the other character's interaction.
Would she have been boring if she'd have not had an unusual family?
There would have been that danger, because you can see, can't you, as someone who's very good, upright, moral and responsible, as I think I said. And it could have gone that way. But because of these other characters, there's a lot of humour and you get to see her really good qualities that go through the whole book.
Would you say that character is the most important element of a novel?
I think it's really important, because when I think of the ones that I like, it's the main character, or sometimes two, but often one main character, that has really gripped me. And I started thinking about two of my favourite crime characters. Well, they're both investigators. And I mentioned before last week, I think, Sarah Paretsky, and she's got this character called Vi Wachowski, who's a tough cop in Chicago. And her characteristics are, she's really brave, almost too brave, you know, sometimes foolhardy, gets into fights and goes onto sites where she shouldn't be going, climbs over walls, usually gets knocked out a few times in the book. And she has other qualities and some very sort of normal things as well, like she has dogs, she likes a certain Italian wine, you know, where she goes and has a sandwich. And I've read so many of these books now, I can almost see her, you know, she's a wonderful character. And then another one, which is by Robert Galbraith, which is J.K. Rowling, Cormoran Strike, another investigator. And he's just come back from Afghanistan and he's injured bodily, but also mentally very injured and vulnerable because of that. But he's also lots of other things. And again, there is another character that brings out a lot of his strengths in the book.
I really just need to point out at this point that you said that I hadn't read any books that you'd read.
Yes.
And actually, I've read all of those. So, yeah. So I just want to get that in.
Yeah, and Matthew Shardlake. So you've read C.J. Sansom as well, another favourite.
I haven't read the latest one, or the one before either.
But there's another interesting character, because Shardlake is lots of things. We have a strong visual image of him, but I think his character's drawn out quite a lot by his other characters near him. And we talked about Jack Barrack, that's the young assistant, and we learn a lot from their interaction.
He's kind of the opposite, isn't he?
Yeah.
Of Shardlake.
Yes.
And so that and that humanises Shardlake somehow. And he's a real likeable character as well.
Mm.
Whereas Shardlake's a bit bitter.
Yeah.
Because of what he's had to cope with in life.
Definitely.
But I suppose you can see why he's like he is.
Yes, in the same way you can see why Cormoran Strike is the way he is, drinking a lot and a bit edgy because he's been injured. And I said both senses are injured.
So you give them a bit of leeway.
Yeah. And that made me think, you saying the leeway, is that not all characters are good. Not all main characters are good. You do occasionally get a main character who's quite a nasty piece of work. But usually you have to relate to them in some way.
I'm just, that makes, when you said that, it made me think of The Sopranos.
Mm.
Did you ever watch that?
I know what it is, I haven't watched it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of the characters, because they're all murdering, yes, and torturing people, mm, but somehow you're still rooting for them. But that brings me to Mark Lawrence's books, The Prince of Fools, The King of Thorns and Emperor of Thorns trilogy, where the main character in that is a nasty piece of work all the way through, but somehow you just root him for him. And then as it goes on, you find out a bit more about him and his reasons for it. But he very much starts it off as wanting you to believe that this... he's only a boy, actually, in the first one, is quite bad.
Well, so do you think the point of this is that the writer needs to show why someone's bad, if you like, otherwise the reader won't take it on and they won't root for them, like you said?
I'm trying to think now, I'm trying to think of books where I've given up on them,
yeah,
because I didn't like the character. And I think it's a fine line. I think you walk a tightrope if you go down that route of having a protagonist that isn't very sympathetic.
Yeah, I want to ask you, because of the way you write, whether if you write something that's not human, whether they still have to have the same character that you can relate to as a reader, even if they're not human.
Well, yes, I think that you do. It's just fun to play with that idea. Because you can design characters with different sort of moral compass or, I don't know. There are authors that have done it with animals, aren't there? Watership yes. Down, but they've got very human characteristics, not really rabbit characteristics.
Yes. So if you had angel or demon or vampire...
Yeah.
You're still having a character come through, almost like a human.
But they are quite close to humans, aren't they? Mm. But in the way that they look, I'm talking now as if they're real.
Yeah.
You'll have to go with me on this.
I'm quite happy to.
So your vampires, there is such a wide spectrum of how vampires are shown in literature that is quite interesting, that there cannot be, well, you keep thinking that there can't be new ways of doing it, but actually people come up with new ways of doing it and new angles all the time, which is really interesting.
It is.
And the same with angels. Do we assume that they're good? Because sometimes they can be evil and they can be remote from human or our qualities.
Hmm. Would you say, wildly generalising, that, do you know what I mean by yin and yang?
Yes,
that,
I do.
That every bad character has a bit of good in them, or every good character has a bit of bad in them?
I like that. I like that way of thinking. I remember I would have been a teenager when I read David Gemmell for the first time, and I can't remember, I don't know which book it's in, but he very much plays with the grey with some characters. So all the way through there'll be murdering and what have you, and then they'll be the one that saves the day. But they're true to their own code throughout, so it's not that they're changing, it's just that the way they see the world, it's logical that they would do that, sacrifice themselves or whatever. And It's quite powerful when you get that right, when an author gets that right.
Mm-hmm. So with the mafia character, for instance, they usually are portrayed as being fairly evil and doing things like murdering people, but they're usually portrayed as very, very strong family, loyal people, love their children, would do anything for their own family.
Yeah, if you're thinking of Tony Soprano, there was a bit of that, but he was also shagging around.
I was thinking of The Godfather as well.
Yes.
And so, the last scene where he's dying in the film, where he's dying, but he's chatting to his little grandchild.
I suppose there's a danger of going down the stereotype route, isn't there? With any of these things, even with the mythical creature things, there's a danger of that.
Without having to say your particular name of the character and anything you've written, if you don't want to, is there one character that you feel you've really succeeded with more than any others?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. In the novel?
It could be, or it could be your novella or your short story.
Short story. Yes. There's a character called Stacey. And I think I got her spot on. Just because she's got the right level of vulnerability. She's human. In a dangerous world, she's got the right level of vulnerability but also toughness and ability to think, which is just typical of your urban fantasy main characters. So yeah, I think I got her right.
That's good.
What about you?
Oh, I should have expected that to come. I didn't expect it. I'm enjoying writing an older character. So I started out writing about two young people and their group of friends, a few young people. And then I started thinking about and writing an older character who's the uncle in my book. And he's older than me, so I'm writing characters under my age and over my age, which is an interesting challenge. But I feel I'm enjoying that character, so I think I might be very pleased with that a bit further along.
That's good. Do you find any difficulty becoming male when you're writing?
No, not so much. It's the age thing for me more. Because you're always thinking, oh, wait a minute, they weren't there at that time. They were there 10 years before I was at that point, sort of thing. Or with the younger ones, the same thing. You're thinking their experience will have started at such a date when I was 30 or 40. So I'm trying to adapt those character time, the times that they're experiencing in my head. And that's quite hard, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder, why didn't I choose to write about people my age? But I haven't at the moment.
I think it's good to challenge yourself, though, because maybe starting it's not a bad thing to make it easy, but then you don't want to be limited, do you?
No, I don't want to. And I think with some of the details, I think I just deal with that later at the editing stage. You know, like, would they have been around for the Beatles, for example? I just think, well, I'll deal with that later.
Can I just say, if anyone can hear some music in the background, we're quite high up, but it seems to be travelling, doesn't it?
It does today. It's quite unusual.
Anyhow, that you don't think that something's going off in your own environment.
Yeah, we could be having a party in the background.
Yeah. I've not really experienced... Well, I've not noticed any issues. I don't mind... I don't see men and women as vastly different. So that hasn't been a challenge for me yet. It might be in the future, I don't know.
I guess it's more likely to be an issue if you're writing a character who was around before we were. Because the stereotypes were stronger then.
Yeah.
There were more things that women couldn't do, for example. My mum and I were talking about this recently, and we both remember, but she remembers more, when women didn't have the power to do certain things we take for granted now, like get a mortgage or get something on what used to be hire purchase. You don't hear that anymore. But buying something in instalments, you used to have to get your husband's signature to do that. Well, yeah. We can't really imagine that now. But if you were writing a character, and of course going further back too, you'd have these things that would perhaps be different just because of the stereotypes of male and female.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I suppose because your novel crosses continents, doesn't it? So I suppose that might still be the case in some areas of the world.
Yes, it might. And well, I'm writing partly in India, and India's fast developing as a country anyway, so I wouldn't like to claim to know, but some of it is based on family history, some of my knowledge, so it's things that happened quite a long time ago, pre-war perhaps, pre-Second World War. So people I didn't necessarily know myself, but I knew how they lived.
So that might mean doing some research at some stage.
It might, and that's another thing that I'm postponing doing along with editing, because you can get so busy researching that you don't have time to do any writing, but I will have to.
It's sort of fun in its own right though, researching, depending what the subject matter is.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm writing a history of India. I'm writing a character who goes there and who has relatives there. So it has to be right, but it's not going to be a sweeping history of the country or anything like that.
Yeah, interesting. And the other thing is, your novel, therefore, is quite multicultural.
Mm.
So you're writing a range of diverse characters.
Yeah.
Which, for me, would be... It's not that I'm not exposed to diversity, because I certainly am, but it's not something that I've considered this early on.
But they're diverse characters here.
Yes, yes.
Which is a bit different from writing another culture experience.
Oh, immersive.
And I may have been a bit ambitious with that, because it's not just India. Some of my characters are from other places too.
Yeah.
But a bit like you said about men and women now, you can find the humanity in people who come from different cultures from your own, and it's very similar.
Oh, they've definitely got a similar sense of humour.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. But that's something that I want to do much more.
Well, if you travel, you sometimes find you can communicate with people even without words, and that's very interesting.
Even if you don't travel.
Yeah, even if you don't.
And you come across people
without
an interpreter. You don't.
Yeah, and you can have humour, and you can have all sorts of interactions without the words.
Mm. But to write from their point of view, you've got to have a real understanding of where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And, of course, even if you understand that, no one's the same, are they?
No, and you need to, as a writer, be thinking about the voice of that character, assuming you are having a voice. So I think you have to make those decisions as well about things we talked about in the group with Laura, as to how near you are to any of your characters. Are you speaking from their voice? Or are you going to try and be in the heads of several characters? And that's always an interesting one, isn't it? And I do have that one with my story, because it's whether to always be just from the woman character, seeing the other characters through her eyes, or whether in different chapters I might be in the other character, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And do you remember what Laura used to call the other thing? I can't think what it's called. Omniscient, that's the word. Omniscient.
A hawk.
Yeah, so in that way you're writing as if you're almost above everybody and you can see everything that everyone's doing and even thinking.
Yeah. I've not tried writing that way because the books that I read generally for enjoyment aren't written that way, so it doesn't come so naturally to me. But I've tried writing in past and present tense and in first and third person. But yeah, that's another one to try.
And switching. You've tried switching from one character to another in the same story, haven't you?
Mm. Yeah. And changing points of view, yeah.
What else can we say about character? I mean, in other episodes we'll probably come back to this. Do you think you could have a book that you'd start without an idea for character in it? I can't think
I start with character. When I'm thinking about a book or writing a book, it's a character that comes to me first. I don't always know them that well. I have to write my way into them.
Yeah.
Some people use questionnaires and
they what do. Have you get done. Quite detailed ones, don't you?
Yeah.
We had a good exercise in the class, which was just to write about something belonging to the character in your book. Do you remember?
I remember
writing about shoes, about one of my characters.
Oh, was it ballet shoes?
Yeah,
I remember yours more clearly than I remember mine. I can't remember what I did.
I'll have to think of that.
Yeah.
But it was a good exercise, I think, because I'm not sure if I could cope with one of those detailed questionnaires. They just seem to have a bit too much detail. But you know the kind of thing, it's like, can you visualise what they would have had for breakfast, what kind of coat they would wear, how they would walk down the street?
I heard or read, and I can't remember where, someone saying that they go out for lunch with their character in order to really see them. Which, if you don't get arrested for being crazy.
Well, as long as there's food involved, I wouldn't mind.
You'd have to eat for two.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
But yes, that would be a good thing to do. Or perhaps you could have a conversation where you write one side and then you are the other side.
You see, that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'd rather just start writing. But then, as you know, I don't do a lot of planning. So, yeah, I'd rather just start writing and get to know them that way.
What do you think about description? Because I know when I go to a film sometimes, the character I see on the screen isn't anything like I'd imagined them when I read the book. And that's a bit off-putting, isn't it? Because you've formed quite a strong picture in your mind. And I think it's quite a knack for the writer not to overwrite it so that the person can't form their own imagination of it, but at the same time they have enough to go on.
I think there's a danger in over describing just from the fact that you've got to remember that.
Yeah, that's true.
All the way through, you've got to remember the colour of their eyes and how long the hair is, and which is okay on one character.
Or one book, but if you do a whole series, you've got to remember.
And you've got to remember each of them, haven't you? So you need like a reference book or something to be able to...
Yes, eye colour, character A, B, C.
I think Nalini Singh has like a folder on each character.
Yeah.
But then she probably has someone to do that for her. Whereas
meantime, more modest writers like ourselves.
Yeah, if you were doing that, you'd never get any writing done.
Perhaps that's why you need a friend, a buddy, or a good editor to suddenly point out to you that you've switched some essential part of your character's description halfway through.
I know, but I don't know what you're like. I can't remember from one week to the next what colour hair they've got. The main character, yes, but it's the side characters and the people that just come in for three chapters and
Maybe you could make little cutouts like we used to do with cereal packets, and draw the clothes onto them and their moustache or whatever, onto the little cutouts.
I have gone on Pinterest and looked at pictures and thought, that's what she would look like, or that's what he would look like, so that I can visualise them.
That's an idea.
And if you, and then if you, I'm not as organised as having a folder. And I think I did put them in Scrivener, but what version? What, as in, what file? I've no idea.
Another good exercise was where we cut out things from magazines and just wrote a piece on from that character's point of view. Do you remember doing that?
I do, yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Didn't... There were some real odd characters, wasn't there, in that as well?
Well, it's good because it stretches you then. Yeah. You're not just writing characters that you like or that you know. You could be writing a character that's quite different.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to this, won't we? But perhaps that's all there is for now, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
No, I think that that's a good time to leave it. So we'll be back in a fortnight. We're trying to put these podcasts out every 2 weeks. We would be ever so grateful if you would leave us a review. And if you would like to visit the website, it's divingintowriting.com. And you can sign up for the newsletter. Okay. See you soon.